If you run a company or manage a team, hiring qualified people quickly can make or break your business. Imagine a position of need going unfilled for weeks or even months because you just can't seem to find the right candidate. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. This makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, there's no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts. You only pay for results on your job post. Just in the last minute that I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data, worldwide. Now that is fast. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. Listeners will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BWN. Go to Indeed.com/BWN right now to support this podcast. Indeed.com/BWN. Terms and conditions apply.
From the Mobile Cookout Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider. Brought to you by Visit Myrtle Beach. Go to visitmyrtlebeach.com to plan your vacation.
We're back. Time for a special edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, a three-day, three-pod week. This is pod number two of three. And we are tipping off our two-part interview with former Tar Heel player and head coach Matt Doherty. And Adam, this is a good interview.
It's hard to even know where to start with this one because there's so much good stuff in there. If for no other reason than an awesome story about Michael Jordan, today's portion of the interview is very enjoyable. I think overall, what it reminded me of, that sometimes you forget in Sportsland, Jones, is that these are real people who are doing these things. Like, you see them on your television, and you think when you turn the television off, they go away. But they are actual people who go to the grocery store and have families and have a life outside of your TV screen. And so all the things that we love to rant and rave about with sports, sometimes we forget. Oh, why did he do that? Oh, well, he probably had a reason. Like, at the time he did it, he, general sports figure, believed he was doing the right thing or else he wouldn't have done it. He didn't do it purposely to make you mad. There were other circumstances to which you're probably not privy that caused that individual to do that thing. And so that's kind of what I took away from this. And that's a useful thing for us both to remember in our regular lives.
As you're going to hear, extraordinarily candid interview from Matt Doherty. And I appreciate him being this open because it's, again, I think as you hear both today and tomorrow, there was a lot of stuff that he felt like he needed to kind of unpack publicly for the first time. And he did so in a respectful way because there was a lot of stuff, as you're going to hear, kind of going on around everything when he was here. So I appreciate his candor.
And I think it speaks really highly of him and just where the situation's come to. I mean, it's been a long time, 15 years. And if you kind of think of the whole spectrum of what has happened, a lot of people forget this. He was the color commentator when Carolina went to Santa Clara and lost the game that Raymond Felton sat out, the first game of the 2005 season.
I had totally forgotten that.
He was sitting right there doing the color. And it was so awkward.
I had totally forgotten that.
So that was like one end of the spectrum. And now we're at the other end of the spectrum where we're able to sit and have a conversation. And clearly he's given it a lot of thought. And it's been nice to see him back in the Smith Center some over the last couple of years. And it hasn't had that same awkward feeling. It's been, oh, there's Coach Doherty. It's good to see him. Let's go say hello.
Sure.
And whereas a few years ago, you might have been, I don't know if hesitant's the right word, but just unsure of what to say. And he referenced it, that he wasn't sure what people thought of him anymore and wasn't sure if it was okay to come back. And I think it's good for everybody that it's gotten to the point where he feels like it's good to be part of Carolina basketball again, because he's a huge part. He was on the night. He was a starter on the 1982 championship team, a starter on the 82 Coach Smith's first championship. So you need people like that involved in your program. He's got a unique perspective, and it was really nice that he was willing to share that with us.
We talk about here in part one. We talk about 82. We talk about kind of what he's doing now. We talk about his relationship with Michael Jordan, and we get into the sequence of events for him that led from him going from Notre Dame to Carolina. So one more thing before we get started. We did this interview with Coach Doherty during the reunion weekend. So he references a couple of times kind of the event and that particular weekend and some of those things. So just understand that when we did the interview, it was right in the heart. It was right in the middle of all those activities going on from a couple of weeks ago. So let's get to – this will be part one. Adam and I will come back afterwards, talk a little bit more. This is part one of our conversation with former Tar Heel head coach, former Tar Heel player, Matt Doherty.
We are joined by another national champion. That's all we have on the podcast, are national champions.
We just check off the box every time.
But, Jones, this national champion is a little more special. Do you know why?
Why is that?
Because Matt Doherty is my mom's favorite player ever.
Hey, and the interview's over. Okay.
I always liked your mom.
Matt Doherty and Jeff Lebo are her two favorites ever.
Really?
But obviously Matt Doherty played before Jeff Lebo.
Yep. That's
so
good.
He's
a great
first
company to be in,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So two sweet 3-point shooters.
Well, Jeff was a lot better shooter than I. However, I am a trivia question that maybe a lot of people probably don't know. In 1981, they put in the 82-83 season, they put in a 3-point shot in the ACC, and it was a robust 19 feet. It intersected the top of the key. And I came down in transition, ironically, and took a 3-pointer in front of our bench in Carmichael and missed it. First of all, I was allowed about 0.2 3-point shots per game.
You filled your quota there. Bro.
Yeah. But being a junior, and, you know, Coach Williams talked about Coach Smith like players with savvy, I immediately thought that, oh, my gosh, I took the first 3-pointer in Carolina history, and I missed it. Now, this is all going through my head during the game. That if I don't make the next one, somebody's going to be the first Tar Heel to make the 3-pointer. Then they're going to say, well, who took the first 3-pointer? And it would have been me. So I said, oh, my gosh. So I came down on the next possession and took a 3 and hit it. So I used up my allotment of 3-pointers for the month. And but that's a true story. Yeah.
You said, hey, I kind of like this sharpshooting thing.
Yeah. Now, Coach Smith, I was very upset as I watched from my couch somewhere when the shot clock came in, because I saw Jeff Lebo and Kenny Smith coming down in transition against Clemson, I think it was. Kenny had like 41. And they're shooting the ball within 10 seconds of the shot clock. I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is not the Carolina basketball I was used to, because we had to pass the ball around 50 times and get it to Brad, Sam, you know, or Michael or James before Jimmy Black and I ever got to look at the basketball. And so and that's good coaching, right? But if the shot clock was in, you know, I probably would have upped my 3-point allotment from 0.2 per game to 0.3.
Especially since you were a 50% shooter.
Was I?
Well, from
at least at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, at the beginning. Yeah, at the beginning. Yeah, I was on a roll. Yeah, I was on a roll. Yeah, short, small sample size.
So, Coach, tell us what you're doing now for if they're Tar Heel fans who don't know what's going on in your life.
Well, I'm working for a former Tar Heel, Bernadette McGlade, in the conference office of the Atlantic 10. I'm associate commissioner for men's basketball, which is an interesting role. Commissioner McGlade, whose jersey is in the rafters in Carmichael for the all-time leading rebounder in women's basketball, was a great player here. And learning a lot, you know, the business of basketball, what goes on behind the scenes. And really, I think any coach should take a sabbatical and do what I did for a year. And they really respect probably more what goes on in the office and especially what the officials do. We have great officials, and Brian Kersey, who's the head of officials for the A-10, is also the head of officials for the ACC. So we have this alliance with the ACC, the Big East, the A-10, and it dips to the CAA and a couple other conferences. It's really a wonderful alliance. Brian Kersey works his tail off, and as a result, we get the best refs in the country. And to see what they go through their training, the things that they have to know on the run, you know, and then they probably miss, you know, maybe as a team of officials in a game, probably 6 calls per game, which you know, can be critical calls. You hope they're not, but it's really amazing what they do get right.
Sure.
And in a game that probably is the most difficult game to officiate, because you have 10 players, big, fast. There's no intermittent timeouts like in football, where, you know, it's a play and a timeout, a play and a timeout. So you have these guys running, and the angles change so fast that what you think might be a foul might not be a foul because of your angle.
What are some of the challenges in your mind facing the A-10 right now? I mean, what are some of the things that as a conference you guys are working
on? Yeah, well, the fight is always at-large bids. Last year there were only 4 at-large bids that went to non-Power 5 conferences, including the Big East. So, we got 2 of them, which was Rhode Island and St. Bonaventure's. Mm-hmm. The other, I think, was Houston. And if I'm not mistaken, it was Nevada, because I don't think Nevada won their conference tournament. So that's really quite a squeeze on the non-Power 5 schools. And so now as these Power 5 conferences expand to 20 games and beyond, you know, we feel like we're getting our inventory squeezed on where we can have the opportunity to showcase our teams by competing against Power 5 teams in non-conference play. So that's probably our biggest challenge.
Some people may not know your other full-time job is parent of an athlete here at the University of North Carolina.
I tell you, it is a cool thing. My daughter and Maddie, who's her teammate, Coxon, is a loyal listener to you guys.
All right.
Yeah. So there's one out there.
We have one loyal listener
and
somewhere.
And your wife, right?
So two. Yeah, Jones's wife doesn't listen all
she
the
doesn't
time.
Listen. No, I know. So Maddie, if you're out there, this is for you. But my daughter, I'm really proud. I have a son who's a varsity. I have 2 children who are varsity athletes in college. My son's a lacrosse player, scholarship lacrosse player at Bellarmine University in Louisville, Division I lacrosse. He's going into his junior year, just started his junior year. My daughter, Hattie, who was a swimmer, and Paul Krause, who worked in the athletic department, won Carolina football game in Charlotte against USC, said, you know, your daughter should look at rowing. And I'm like, rowing? She's a swimmer. She's like, well, no, only 3% of the girls that row in college rowed before. And they recruit swimmers and volleyball players. And my daughter's 6 foot tall, long arms. And so she signed up for camp. The coaches liked her. They offered her a partial scholarship. She was on the novice team last year. And then she has to had to pass the 5K and a 2-mile run, which she did in her first shot. She worked extremely hard this last summer. So she's on the varsity team this year. And it is such a cool thing to have my daughter here. There are times I have to pinch myself. I remember one day in particular, her freshman year, she stayed in Carmichael. And she had a Carolina blue hoodie on. and we were standing out on the red brick walkway between Carmichael Dorm and the football stadium and the pine trees and everything. And I said goodbye. She turned and walked away towards campus. And I just looked at her walking away saying, my God, I can't believe, thank God that she's here as a UNC student, and so proud that she's here. And, you know, I walked away, got my car and drove off, and just still can't believe she's a student athlete at the University of North Carolina. It warms my heart, and very proud.
How in the world did that happen, by the way? I just remember your kids being like little kids.
When you're a young parent and the older parents say it goes by fast, and you're like, yeah, whatever, you know, it goes by fast.
Yeah.
But there's no more joy than you. Well, people say grandchildren, but I can't imagine what that's like because I have so much joy watching, just being a parent, watching my kids grow and develop, and, you know, brought back memories to my dad, who would sit in a lawn chair at a camp or a baseball game with a shirt that didn't match his shorts and the white socks with what we call Jesus sandals, which my dad was ahead of his time because they were Birkenstocks. So now I try to at least match my shorts with my shirt.
That's right. Be very dapper.
I do have the Birkenstocks, and I have the ugliest toes in America. But I don't care anymore because I'm married with two kids. So I'm not trying to impress
anybody. Who are you trying to impress
out there? I'm not trying to impress anybody.
You're just watching the game.
I'm watching the game. And I got a hat that doesn't fit because I got a big head. And but I'm just that proud dad that now I get it. Like when my son was born and I was working for Roy Williams at Kansas, we had the christening, and I was driving my family back to the airport and dropped my dad off. And I remember turning to my dad and I said, now I realize how much you love me, you know, and I don't think you realize how much your parents love you till you have children. And it's very powerful.
I think maybe I didn't explain to you how this works. We're supposed to make you cry. You don't make it get dusty for us. We're only 10 minutes in. Let's start over, and I'll explain to you better how this is supposed to work.
Yeah, well, the thing about a podcast, we don't have time limits, right?
So
we can just talk.
We can stay here all day.
And then you could edit.
Or we'll just leave it all in. Yeah. You never know.
Yeah. And you'll really get – I'm sure all the sponsors will be lining up after this one. Wow, you had Matt Daugherty on for 2 hours and 35 minutes talking about his daughter and son.
Hey, define
– We'll line up the sponsors.
The fine folks at Cookout are excited that you're here. Pinehurst Resort, happy to be here.
I love Pinehurst, one of my favorite spots in all the world. And number two is one of my favorite golf courses. And then the Pinecrest Inn, which I know is not part of their resort, but it's in Pinehurst, obviously. And then Cookout is awesome. The shakes are so thick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you got to you gotta warm up with your jowls so they won't cramp up. Like, you have to do preseason conditioning.
Yeah, you do a lot of work.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Did
so
you
sometimes
know you can
just go to the spoon.
Did you know you can combine the flavors?
Wow, really?
Yeah, you can combine two or more flavors and make your own flavor.
Wow, so do you have the Adam Lucas?
We have a pod.
We have the pod.
It's called the pod.
The pod.
Oreo and chocolate. You combine
can't
the
beat
two.
That.
Yeah, I know. No. I need to just get our list of sponsors, just have Coach Doherty go through and be like, oh, yes, yeah, StubHub is a wonderful
way. I do get all my
tickets
on StubHub.
StubHub, yeah, of course, yeah. Gotta get hockey tickets for my son.
There you go.
StubHub.
Do Hattie's friends and classmates know you as Hattie's dad or as Matt Daugherty, basketball player and basketball coach?
I think it kind of morphs from Hattie's dad to, you know, they'll see, you know, last year at the reunion when walked out on the field to give the championship rings out, you know, her friends then saw, oh, my gosh, that's Hattie's dad, who's a coach.
Did they think you were just loose on the field? Like, well, what's he doing out there? Hattie, go get your dad.
Got senile. There he goes. Yeah, on Golden Pond. Yeah, there he goes, walking in the woods. Yeah, that'll be in a few years. Let's wait for that time. So they'll go to Bredman's. They love to. I go to my daughter. Listen, you can't go to places that I went to without my approval first. Like, you're not allowed to go to the coffee shop. You're not allowed to go to Bredman's. You can't go to the Waffle House. You can't go to, you know, Spanky's is closed.
It has, yeah, a new place in its place.
Wow. So you can't go to those places without my approval. She loves to go to Breadman's. Is that a sponsor, by the way?
It's about to be.
Yeah, we'll lock it in. I like it. I'm sure you meant Top of the Hill, who is a fine sponsor.
Scott is terrific.
Oh, yeah.
Navy grad. And Scott, we love Top of the Hill. We go to the Top of the Hill all the time, make sure we get a seat on Franklin Street. And, we usually one of our definite stops, and that's another place my daughter needs my approval before she goes. But so when they go to places like Breadman, they see a poster of an old team, and they say, oh, that's Hattie's dad. So, you know, you morph into Hattie's dad to, oh, you coached here, and, you know, you get some street cred, but, you know, after you open your mouth and you mention something that's not cool anymore, you kind of lose the street cred, so I got to just shut up.
That's Adam's life. He's good. He's fine. Yeah. We had the opportunity a couple weeks ago to speak to Gene Durham, who's Woody's widow.
Sure.
And we were talking about a lot of things, and one of the things she talked about was how 1982, she said that was Woody's favorite game, favorite call, favorite moment that he had just in his entire career covering Carolina, because it was so – it just seemed like it was so special to everyone for Coach Smith.
Right.
Did you guys – do you remember feeling that way too when you were in it?
Yeah, I think not to the extent, because as a kid, you know, and Coach Smith did such a good job of deflecting any attention onto him. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we knew that he had gone to 5 or 6 Final Fours and hadn't won. So we, you know, heard about the monkey on his back and all that. But, you know, again, being 19, 20 years old, you have other thoughts.
Sure.
You know, and again, he did a great job of deflecting. And I've used this quote before the championship game. He's like, you know, there are billions of people in China that don't care who wins this game. You know, it's his way to take the edge off. You know, but looking back, to say you were a player on his first national championship team is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, just like, you know, Raymond and Sean will say that about Coach Williams, because then you kind of feel like you get bragging rights. Like, you know, yeah, you were on the championship, but I was on his first championship.
You know? Like whatever, Montross.
Or even the guys before, like the great players. Yeah, you had a great career, but I was on his first national championship team, so you really didn't help him like I did, you know? Yeah. So you it's like being, you know, we talk about the Carolina family. It's like being in any other family. Like, I have 4 siblings, so we always joke, like, I don't joke. I mean, I was the golden child. And
this is serious.
No, it is serious, Jones. I have 3 older sisters. My dad finally had the boy, and 6 years later, my brother came along. And in the Catholic Church, they, you know, they believe in different things, and the rhythm method doesn't always work well. So my brother was an oops baby. So, like, he screwed it up. I'm like, dude, like, he comes out. I'm like, dude, what, who are you? Why are you here? And so at dinner table, like, we'll go around and we call it competitive dining. So we talk, and I'll say, John, shut up. You're not even supposed to be here.
It's like the trump card. Right. You got it. Boom.
It got it all the time. So, you know, it's the same in this family. It's just a larger family.
One thing that those family members always like to do when they're on here with us is, like, the 05 and 09 guys like to go back and forth about which team was better.
Yeah.
If we had a national championship tournament of Tar Heel championship teams, how badly would the 82 team beat everybody?
I tell you what, the 84 team was the best team that I was on. And I think one of the best teams ever at UNC. I'm biased. It still breaks my heart. I'll be at a stoplight and I'll be just like, people will be honking, and I'll be thinking about the loss to Indiana. I think about the loss to LSU when Kenny Smith got undercut by John Tudor, and we were undefeated, and no one was beating us. And we had the depth. That was the difference in that team versus the 82 team. If we got – although we did get injuries, but we had – all of a sudden you had Brad Daugherty, dislocated fingers, Kenny Smith, broken wrist, you know. But in 82 – you know, we didn't have the depth that we did. I mean, we came off the bench in 84 you know, we had Kenny Smith, Brad Daugherty, Michael Jordan, a junior Michael Jordan, a senior Sam Perkins, myself, and then off the bench you had Steve Hale, Buzz Peterson, Dave Popson, and Joe Wolf. I mean, that's a pretty good team.
Yeah.
And so we were blistering teams. And then when Kenny got hurt, you know, that really took us in a different direction. And then we were in a funk and the perfect storm. And so, the 82 team, and I say this, and, you know, I'm an old guy now, and, you know, but like these current teams, no offense, who's going to guard James Worthy? Like, there is nobody in college basketball since James Worthy that's been like James Worthy. Maybe Chris Webber. I'd say Chris Webber, probably the closest. James Worthy at 6'9", you know, as great as Michael was in college, James was the baddest man, in my opinion, that played at North Carolina, period. His speed, his hands, his ability to pass, his great teammate, there's nobody that could match up. And okay, I take any of those championships. Who's guarding Sam Perkins? Sorry, Tyler. Who's guarding James Worthy? I don't even know who the power forward was with Tyler.
Deion Thompson.
Sorry, Deion. Who's guarding Michael Jordan?
Wayne Ellington, yeah.
Sorry, Wayne. Who's guarding Jimmy Black? Who is their point
guard? Tyler.
Okay, I like that matchup. Good matchup. Very similar. I'll take Jimmy. Jimmy's a little bigger. Now, the only advantage they had, and I don't know who it was.
Danny but, Green, yeah.
Yeah, Danny. Two Long Island guys that would be talking crap. Danny could score, could shoot, defend, but he'd waste his defensive energies on a guy that didn't score. So, you know, so maybe they had one spot where they had an advantage, but all the other spots we would have taken care of business.
Michael Jordan is just this entity all to himself with what he has been, what he was able to accomplish and what he became. Just how, when you think back on it, how wild was that? I mean, that you're sitting there running with him when he's 18, 19, 20, and yeah. You guys were friends and teammates and all those things.
Yeah, it blows my mind, you know, to think back and to see pictures you know, to that now he's this icon and you know, successful businessman and all that he's done, you know. And I remember people asking me, did you think the most popular questions I got after I was done kind of playing, they'd say, did you think Michael Jordan was going to be this good? Is Dean Smith a great guy? And I forget the other question. And I was like, no, yes. And because I didn't think, growing up, I probably paid too much respect to the older players, like Dr. J, Larry Bird, you know, those types of players. I had too much respect for them. Walter Davis, Mitch Kupchak, you know, just revered them. You know, I worshiped these guys. I had posters of them in my room. And so to think that, you know, I remember my first game, one of my first games at Carolina was against Duke, and I'm going up against Gene Banks. Well, you know, I saw Gene Banks in high school, you know, West Philly or his high school, Philadelphia High School, play Long Island Lutheran. And, you know, he was an All-American. And I'm like, gosh, Gene Banks, you know, and the muscles are popping. And I'm like, you know, but then you realize, you know, it's basketball. And like, you can play with those guys at times. So I had so much respect for Larry Bird and Dr. J and Jabbar to say, oh, is Michael Jordan going to be as good as those guys? You're like, come on. You know, I mean, I've just split a pizza with this guy. You know, he's across the hall ironing his jeans. You know, he can't be as good as Dr. J. And so, but the summer after his freshman year, I'm sitting in the bleachers at Carmichael, and we're playing summer pickup ball like we always did, and Michael Jordan is going against Walter Davis. And I love Walter Davis, the Greyhound, one of my favorite players, one of my favorite people. But Michael's giving it to him, like bad. And Walter's all pro.
Yeah.
And Michael just finished his freshman year. And I'm like, I literally remember saying in the stands, saying to myself, oh, Michael, like, oh, don't do that. That's disrespectful. Don't disrespect Walter like that. You know, then the switch was on, man.
Yeah.
He was. And then you get to the NBA and people, Coach Smith held him back. And you're like, wait a second. The rules held him back. You know, we didn't have a bigger three-point line which stretched out the defense. You didn't have a shorter shot clock. You had help side defense. You had zone defenses. In the NBA, it was one-on-one, especially when Michael was playing, because help had to be outside the lane on the weak side. Matter of fact, I think it had to be within 6 feet of your man so you could lift the weak side to, you know, the hash mark. And so Michael beat his man. There was no help at the rim. So it was tailor-made for him. And I remember seeing him in the Olympic teams playing against the NBA guys and tearing those guys up. And then when he was dancing on Larry Bird, dropping 63 in the playoffs, it was like, oh my gosh, this is pretty cool.
In addition to the great players, Jones and I have said before on here, we feel like just the characters in the ACC were, for whatever reason, they were more entertaining in that era. What was it like to be out there with Jim Valvano and Lefty Driesell and guys like that?
Yeah, you know, we talked off air about Lefty. I think the political correctness has lost some of the flavor of Lefty Driesell, Valvano, Billy Tubbs at Oklahoma, Abe Lemons at Texas. You know, Billy Tubbs famously said during a game one time, you know, don't throw anything on the court, no matter how bad the officials are. And then, bam, bam, three technicals. Lefty Driesell, we're playing Maryland in Carmichael. And we're up by like six with, let's say, 2 minutes to go. And Lefty fouls James Worthy because James statistically is, you know, like shooting in the 60s. And everyone else is in the high 70s or better. So, and Coach Smith always wanted us to line up two inside, one at the top of the key, one back at half court. And I was at the top of the key. In case we missed, you always reached in, you know, stepped in with your inside hand and foot and tapped out to the top of the key. So I'm at the top of the key, and before James is getting ready to get the ball, I hear, "Hey, James! Hey, James!" And I look over to my left, and there's Lefty with his hands around his neck yelling at James Worthy, giving Stick the choke sign. And I look at Lefty with this surprised look, and he just winks at me. You know, it was awesome. James made the foul shots. We win. And many years later, I think about 2 years ago, I was scouting a game for the Pacers, and I met Maryland. Lefty's there, and I brought up that story, and we just laughed. And you miss those times. You know, those were great times. And Lefty always turned up the heat in Coalfield House. And Coach Smith, when we won at Coalfield House, always led us in song. Not Amazing Grace. I forget the name of the song.
Amen.
Amen. Yeah, amen. Yeah. And Coach Guthridge and Lefty hated each other. So, after one game we won at home, Lefty kind of slapped Coach Smith's hands, you know, didn't give him the shake, and Coach Guthridge went after him. And two players, I think, had to pick him up. And they picked him up by the elbows, and Coach Guthridge's feet were still going like Fred Flintstone in his car. Yeah, it's funny.
Of course, both Coach Smith and Coach Guthridge we've lost in the last couple of years. I'd just be wondering kind of how those events hit you and kind of what emotions went through you when those two things happened.
Well, I think with Coach Smith, the sad thing was, you know, the mental capacities that left him, because he was such a smart man, you know, a high IQ, brilliant man. And for him to lose his mental capacities first was kind of weird and sad. And because he, you know, people tell you to this day, they'd say, yeah, I remember meeting Coach Smith. And 5 years later, I see him in the airport and he comes up and calls me by name. Like, that's freakish, right? Yeah. So, and then it was, I think, weird. How many months apart did they pass?
It was about a year, right, Adam? Yeah. Is that right? It wasn't much more than
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it kind of, you know, reminds me of, you know, when you hear of elderly couples, you know, one spouse passes and the mm-hmm. other spouse passes. Because they were attached at the hip, you know, for so long that it was ironic that they died so close in time to each other. So, but they left such a great legacy. I mean, there's, you know, I walked in here at 9:59, and you guys immediately referenced, you know, time and Coach Guthridge, and the bus would leave, and you know, and so there's so many things I was thinking today, you know, about teaching and Coach Smith's quote, you know, praise the actions you want repeated. You know, I mean, there's so many life lessons that we learned. I hear this all the time, and I was not a good English student, but Coach Smith, in the middle of a locker room talk, X and O session, was talking about trapping the ball, and there's two interceptors and a goaltender, and the goaltender is the one who's the farthest away from the ball. And then he stops and he says, you know, I said father instead of further. He says, because far, F-A-R, deals with distance. So now when I hear these big-time broadcasters, you know, talking on air, and they screw that up, I said, well, you know, you made a mistake. Coach Smith would correct you, you know. And I have to fight from correcting some people when they do that because, you know, anyway. But
I was wondering who kept calling in to the Tar Heel Sports Network during our games and going, oh, no, you said that's the wrong grammar, Jones.
But, you know, isn't that cool? Like, you know, it's and Coach Smith has been through so much that I wonder, you know, like I would love to – see how he would communicate to his players right now all that's going on this campus with Silent Sam and the civil rights and Civil War. And, you know, he would be able to put that in a form where everybody could understand and respect. Because he's a very bright man that was very well read and worldly, where a lot of coaches aren't. You know, they're got tunnel vision,
sure,
and they only know, you know, what they're doing at practice today and what's going on in the next game, where Coach Smith surrounded himself with brilliant minds and was well-read.
You had the opportunity, as you referenced, to see Michael Jordan in practice, and then you also were able to coach Julius Peppers in basketball practice.
Yeah.
What similarities in just athleticism or potential did you see in those two individuals?
Well, I think a couple things. When you think of athleticism, not many people talk about hands, but they both had great hands. I mean, Julius's hands were as big as Michael's. The explosiveness. I remember when Julius, like his first practice, we're doing stations, and I'm kind of looking over the three baskets that are being managed by the coaches, and all of a sudden, Julius goes up and just dunks on somebody in practice. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, he's a 6'7" defensive end. You know, Julius, the savvy, the feel. You know, Coach Smith talked about, Coach Williams talked about savvy, and Coach Smith always talked about savvy and feel. Julius Peppers, a football player, and a guy comes out and. And we have a complicated system, you know, a lot of sets that are not only calls but reads off of sets, options. And he knew them, you know, and I know he got criticized publicly for his transcript. But Julius was smart and a smart athlete and could really pick things up. Matter of fact, we had a dribble option play that we ran at Florida State, ironically, against Steve Robinson. And he ran it flawlessly for a backdoor layup at a key moment for Joe Forte. Julius could have played in the NBA if he wanted to.
So you're the head coach at Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah.
Everything happens here at Carolina with Coach Guthridge stepping aside. Just what do you remember about that time period and how all that kind of played out?
Well, I just, like you said, finished my first year at Notre Dame. I am on vacation with my wife and Fred Quarterbaum and his wife, Christy, in Michigan, on Lake Michigan, St. Joseph's, I think it was. And I call Coach Smith because I'm thinking Coach Williams is going to take the job and then Kansas is going to open up. And, you know, is that something that would come to me? If so, should I be prepared for it? How should I be prepared? So I call him from – and this was no vacation. It was – So I call him and I said, you know, coach, you know, if Kansas calls, what, you know, should I do? And he says, well, it's not a done deal here yet. You're on the short list. And I'm like, well, that's a no-brainer. And that was kind of the end of the conversation. And so a week later, whatever, 10 days later, I'm sitting in the Smith Center across from Coach Smith. And he says, well, what do you think? I said, well, I've got to think about this. You know, I've got to talk to my wife. And he says, well, just 10 days ago, you said it was a no-brainer. Typical Coach Smith, right? Yeah. And so I said, I didn't know I was a candidate that time. Now I'm a candidate. And so so I go back, fly in a plane, private plane with my wife, and I'm sitting on this private plane, and this sounds like great, but it's really tormenting. I said to her, I could be the head coach at North Carolina or the head coach at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
I mean, like, pretty good options.
Yeah.
So I was really torn. Yes, I love Notre Dame. You know, I still do. It's a special place. It fit me. So I go back, and I'm thinking about it. And, you know, now you try to just, like, who can you trust? Like, who can you really give you good information? Because those people were always Roy Williams and Dean Smith. But now they've got a, you know, dog in the race. So I've, you know, where do I turn for clear head thinking? You know, my wife. And then you start freaking out. You're like, oh, I'm walking through, you know, the grocery store and I see a guy with a Tar Heel shirt on in South Bend. That's a sign. I got to take the job, right? Adam, that's definitely a sign. You're in the grocery store with a guy who wears a t-shirt. Yeah. So you start doing stupid things. And then I think, resigned to, and my wife, we had a friend who's at the time who's connected to Carolina. So I think my wife was feeding information. Matter of fact, I know she was. She's from North Carolina. She wanted to come back. And, you know, and ultimately, how do you turn this down, right?
Right.
You know, it's your alma mater. It's one of the best jobs in all of sports. And my wife's from North Carolina. And you have a better chance to win a national championship. Every year you have a chance. So Coach Smith being Coach Smith, and I knew this later on, it hit me even more. You know, he's a great recruiter. Like, people underestimate his recruiting. Like, he was a great recruiter. Like, people thought, well, you know, he didn't really put much into recruiting. He just let the assistants do it, and, you know, he coached people up. It's like, no. He knew how to recruit. And he knew how to work people. And so I'm coming down one morning to breakfast with my Notre Dame gear on, and I think my wife then goes to the bathroom and calls my friend, he's got his Notre Dame gear on. You got to do something drastic.
Send that guy to the grocery store with his t-shirt on.
We gotta... So all of a sudden, Michael Jordan calls and says, if you don't take the job, Coach Smith is probably going to go to Rick Majerus. And I know, like, looking back, I know Coach Smith had Michael call me because he knew how much I would respect Michael's call. And he also probably knew that if he mentioned a non-Tar Heel to coach here, that I would then do anything in my power to take the job. I didn't ask to come back to North Carolina. I was content at Notre Dame. But at the end of the day, I could not stand the sight of a non-Tar Heel coaching here because I didn't think they would get it. And that's ultimately why I took the job. So, do we have another 2 hours?
Oh, we got as much time as you want. Right. We're just getting loose.
You know, and this is, you know, I've told these stories privately, but I think, you know, this is healthy for me to talk openly.
So, Adam, really good stuff. I think one of the more interesting things was there at the end where he talked about just the challenge, just how difficult it was for him to accept the job because he knew it was a how do you ever turn this job down? But I think he also knew that there were going to be some things that weren't as easy just to say, okay, I'll leave my other team and go there.
It's so unusual to think that there are people listening to this who are unaware of all these things that happened. Because to you and I, it's like a where were you when kind of thing, because we lived it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like this all happened in the span of an hour. You have to imagine that this all unfolded over a week or so. And I thought Coach Doherty made a good point. He had what was a great job to him at Notre Dame. I mean, if you're a Carolina basketball fan, Notre Dame may or may not be 1B to you. But to a Long Island kid who, as he referenced, had some affinity for Notre Dame for other reasons, that's a great job. And he had only been there 1 year. I had forgotten that part, that he had only been the head coach 1 year. So I think for us on the Carolina Insider, it's easy to sit here and go, well, of course, if you get offered the Carolina job, you take it. But it wasn't as easy for him. And he referenced that whole grocery store thing, like, oh, I thought it was a sign. That actually got a lot of play at the time. Like, that was mentioned, I think, at the introductory press conference, and it became sort of a linchpin of the introductory Matt Doherty stories. Oh, he saw someone wearing a Carolina shirt at the grocery store, and that's why he took the job. And it's funny now to sit here 15 years later and hear him go, you know, people made a big deal of it. It was like some guy just wearing his right. T-shirt at the store.
So part two is tomorrow. And he gets, because I'm going to be honest, Adam and I don't, we ask a couple of questions, but not many. He really gets into the mistakes he thinks he made, when he kind of realized maybe things weren't going well, some of the challenges that he had. We get much more into that here in part two coming up tomorrow.
It's interesting how much of this interview ended up being applicable to more than just basketball.
Yes.
Like, we wanted to have him on to talk about his place in Carolina basketball, because that's what we do. But I thought a lot of things he said, I thought to myself, that's a very good point that you could apply to other things about dealing with people or being in leadership positions or all sorts of things. And I think people will get that out of tomorrow also.
So, part two coming tomorrow of our Matt Doherty interview. Also, we will preview the East Carolina football game. Huge game coming up for the Tar Heels in Greenville at 3:30 on Saturday. Adam, anything else before we get out of here?
That Michael Jordan story was an all-timer.
Yes. Yes. There are a lot of good. We got a lot of good.
I looked up and he was giving it to Walter Davis. Michael, don't do that.
I say, Adam, let's see, who could we have send us off here on the Carolina Insider? I don't know. Who do you think?
Matt Doherty?
Well, do you want to wait or have him send us off on day two?
Oh, I thought if he got a two-part interview, he
then
got
he gets
a, two
to do
part,
it twice?
A two-part Big Grits.
I'll allow it. So we'll have Matt Doherty and the Rizzo send us off. We'll be back with you tomorrow on this edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Matt Doherty. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.
Is your cash working hard for you right until the very moment you need it? It could be if it was in a Wealthfront cash account. With Wealthfront, you can earn 4% annual percentage yield from partner banks until you're ready to invest, nearly 10 times the national average. And you get free instant withdrawals to eligible accounts 24/7, 365. 4% APY is not a promotional rate, and there's no limit to what you can deposit and earn. And it takes just minutes to transfer your cash to any of Wealthfront's expert-built investing accounts when you're ready. Wealthfront, money works better here. Go to Wealthfront.com to start saving and investing today. Cash account offered by Wealthfront Brokerage, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Wealthfront is not a bank. The APY on cash deposits as of December 27, 2024 is representative, subject to change, and requires no minimum. Funds in the cash account are swept to partner banks where they earn the variable APY. The national average interest rate for savings accounts is posted on FDIC.gov as of December 16, 2024. Go to Wealthfront.com to start today.